Thank you very much for your words of welcome. I'm thrilled to be here. I've heard so much about this university, and it's my first visit. And I'm also impressed by the crowd here. I hope you are here on your own initiative. You are not forced to come here to listen to us. So one thing I can promise is that I'm not going to read a speech. I would rather share my views and ideas about the Eastern Partnership, how we see it from Central Europe, from Slovakia. What are our expectations from this program? I would start with the European Union, which is a global player, as you know very well. There is no international issue, there is no international problem where the European Union would not be part of it. Traditionally, Europe has been the one who paid the bills for the others to run the show and to make or to find political solutions, which is not the role we want to play. And as we grow bigger and more compact, and after we've signed the Lisbon Treaty and created European External Action Service, it's clear that Europe wants to be more ambitious and to be more of a player and not only a payer. And it's logical that when we are acting in such parts of the world like Africa, we want to be in the leading role when it comes to our neighborhood. Because if we are to be a global player, then we have to demonstrate it in countries which are neighboring to the European Union. We have our program for the countries of the Western Balkans, which is enlargement policy. That means ultimately all these countries will join the European Union. 9 years ago, European Union came up with the European Neighborhood Policy, which was focusing on the south, so Northern Africa and the countries to the south of Europe. And then 4 years ago, upon the initiative of my distinguished colleague Karol Bildt and our Polish colleague Radek Sikorski, Sweden, Poland, initiated the idea of the Eastern dimension of European Neighborhood Policy, namely the Eastern Partnership. The Eastern Partnership policy is aimed at the six countries of the former Soviet Union, Belarus, Ukraine, Moldova, and the three Caucasus Republic, Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan. And the idea is very positive and innocent, namely, this is our common neighborhood between the European Union and the Russian Federation, and we believe it's in everyone's interest that these countries are politically stable, predictable, economically prosperous, and respecting more or less the similar set of values as we do when it comes to the rule of law, basic principle of democracy, and protection of human rights. So it's not meant to offend anyone. It's definitely should be in the interests of everyone. So it's not a zero-sum approach, but it's rather a win-win approach. The idea became imminent after the events in Georgia, after the war in Georgia, 2008. And in 2009, we had the first official launching of the program in Prague. The Prague summit started the Eastern Partnership policy of the European Union. Prague was a success in itself because the fact that the summit did take place and all the leaders were there, and we ended up with having a tangible program. Then we spent our time elaborating what are the details of Eastern Partnership, and it all boiled down to three basic policies, which are called political association, economic integration, and visa liberalization. Political association means that these countries will adhere to the same sets of values. We will sign association agreements with them. That means we will be following the same goals and organizing our political lives according to the same set of values. However, we stop short of offering full membership in the European Union to these countries. But the formula is fair, would I say, because it's open-ended. So we say we are not saying, like in the countries of the Western Balkans, that we are offering you a membership, but we are not saying that there will be no membership either. So the end game depends on what you make out of it. And how committed you will be to this program, it will decide about what the end game of this program is. Economic integration means expanding the European free trade area and European common market to these countries. That means full integration into European common market for these countries. And for this purpose, we are preparing deep and comprehensive free trade area agreement. And visa liberalization is something I don't need to elaborate on, because of course it's very attractive for all these countries and their citizens to get ultimately visa-free travel to the European Union. We have also agreed that the Eastern Partnership Program will have two dimensions: bilateral, where we engage individually with these countries, and multilateral, when they work together among themselves as six. Then we had the second summit 2011 in Warsaw, which was a success in the way that it became clear that it's already a serious program that acquired additional dimensions, such as NGO dimension, civic dimension, parliamentary dimension, business dimension. So it's it really works in number of dimensions and number of directions. The problem with Warsaw was that Belarus was missing for different reasons. And now, in November this year, we will have a third Eastern Partnership Summit, which is taking place in Vilnius, because Lithuania, as you know, is presiding over the European Union this 6 months. We have progressed a lot in our preparation. So what is our ambition? What are our expectations from Vilnius Summit? First of all, we would like to sign the association agreement and DCFTA with Ukraine. Ukraine has been most advanced. We've initialed this agreement with them. Actually, it happened to be me when I worked in Brussels, and my very last working day before taking over as the foreign minister of Slovakia on the 31st of March 2011, I initiated an association agreement with Ukraine. There has been, so it's the first out of the six countries that progressed that far. So we speak about signing, but of course there are some conditions. And there are three countries with whom we have already completed negotiations on the association agreement DCFTA, namely Moldova, Georgia, and Armenia. So the goal has been to initiate these three agreements with these countries. The second goal is, of course, to progress on the free movement of people, on visa liberalization. The third goal, to develop economic cooperation with these countries in general and among themselves. And the fourth goal is to adopt a summit declaration that would be forward-looking, strategic, and that would give us perspective for the period to come beyond Vilnius. Because if we are successful and if we achieve what we want to achieve, then what will follow is implementation, which is extremely important, but not extremely visible and definitely not very sexy. So we need to keep the program visible and on the agenda and make it attractive for our partners and for our public. So that's why it's really important that apart from painful implementation and technical nitty-gritties, there is something that keeps it on the radar screen for all of us. So are we facing challenges in this program? Yes, we do. Okay, it would be too easy and too boring if we were not. What are the challenges? First one is that the Eastern Partnership is not the only game in town. As you know, there is a country called the Russian Federation, and it has its own regional project, which is called the Eurasian Union. And Russia happens to be interested in the same countries as we are working within the Eastern Partnership program. Now, this meeting that we are having right now would be different if we have met a week ago, because something very important happened last week, namely that Armenia, after concluding association agreement and DCFTA negotiations with us, announced that they are joining the customs union with the Russian Federation. And it's clear that you can't have both, because it's mutually exclusive. It's based on different sets of rules. So that means if Armenia goes along and decides to join the customs union, we will not sign the association agreement DCFTA. That means they will not be part of our economic and cultural space. They will be part of a different space. Russia is discouraging the other countries of the Eastern Partnership from signing or from entering into even initialing of our agreements. So, as I said at the beginning, Eastern Partnership was never meant to be a policy or instrument against anyone, particularly not against Russia. It so happens that there is a competition between the European Union and Russia on or about the Eastern partners. So that's one challenge, how to keep it as a win-win policy and not to turn it into a zero-sum game, or not to go back into a Cold War mentality. The second challenge is increasing differentiation among the Eastern partners themselves. It becomes clear that we need to be less rigid and more flexible in implementing our policy without giving away or without stepping back from what is fundamental for us, that means our values. But these countries are different. You have two front runners, which are Moldova and Georgia. You have Armenia that has been progressing quietly, but has put basically itself out of the competition now. You have Ukraine, which is huge, which is important, which has progressed furthest away, as I said, but Ukraine has to address three conditions as stipulated by the European Union, and the most sensitive and most visible of them is so-called selective justice. And you know that for many EU member states, selective justice means particularly the case of Yulia Tymoshenko. And it's difficult to imagine that there will be consensus among the EU 28, and particularly that there will be majority among the members of European Parliament to sign and ratify the association agreement with Ukraine as long as Yulia Tymoshenko is in prison. I'm saying this as an observer, because I can also say that Slovakia would be ready and is ready to sign, because we believe it's important, but I see no consensus on this issue. Then there is Azerbaijan, which is in a different position because, first of all, they are not members of WTO, therefore they cannot sign the DCFTA. And this is the richest out of the six countries, so not really depending on our financial incentives, and they would prefer a slightly different treatment from us. And then there is Belarus, with all the limits on the shortcomings on democracy and limits on our dialogue, which is non-existent right now. We are discussing if and how to invite Belarus to the summit and how to engage with them. So that means, as I said, the first challenge is two concepts. The second challenge is the increasing differentiations. And the third challenge is the fact that four out of these six countries are confronted with what we call frozen conflicts, but these conflicts are not frozen. You have Transnistria as a problem for Moldova, you have Nagorno-Karabakh, which is a problem for Armenia, Azerbaijan, and you have South Ossetia and Abkhazia as a problem for Georgia. And we cannot pretend these problems don't exist. We cannot engage with these countries with ignoring existence of these problems, because these are huge security problems. At the same time, we shall respect the fact that for each of the problems, there is already international arrangement. There is a Minsk group dealing with Nagorno-Karabakh, and there is a so-called 5+2 dealing with Transnistria, and there is a Geneva mechanism dealing with the Georgian breakaway territories. So how to be more involved without disrupting the architecture which is already there? So these are the issues that we are also discussing right now. But as I said, we should be ambitious, and the European Union should have its say also in dealing with these conflicts. So this is, I say, a state of play of the Eastern Partnership. It's easier for me to start, because I could present the facts, and Kyle will have to add the philosophy, which is more difficult. My final remark is about the role of my country here. We believe that countries like Slovakia, of course, we are keen supporters of this program, because we have been through transition ourselves successfully. We have a lot of experience, which is authentic, mostly positive. We can share a lot with these countries. We know how beneficial it was for us to undertake all the reforms, how much it paid off to our citizens, how good it was, and we can talk very openly with our partners, because they know that we are talking to them on the basis of our own experience, and we are not telling them something we've learned from the books. That's why all the countries from Central and Eastern Europe and Northeastern Europe are strong supporters of this problem. And of course, probably the very last challenge, which is not a huge one, but it speaks for itself, is that if we had first summit in Prague, the second in Warsaw, the third one is taking place in Vilnius, and the fourth one is scheduled to take place in Riga, it also indicates a bit about the European Union's attitude when it comes to this Eastern Partnership, and it's really important that it's a policy which is equally enthusiastically supported by all the EU member states. And I'm not saying we are divided, but it would be good to show and to demonstrate that it's, this policy is supported by so-called old and new members. So I think I'll stop here, so I'll leave some space for my colleague and friend Karel Belt. Thank you very much for your attention.